Today's Community News makes conversation the great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
This is the Space Show with Andrew Rennie. Galileo was a spacecraft that orbited Jupiter for 8 years, from 1995 December until 2003 September. To avoid any chance that Galileo might crash into and contaminate one of the moons of Jupiter, the unsterilized craft was deliberately incinerated in the atmosphere of the giant gas planet. A few days before Galileo's death plunge, one of the scientists who used Galileo's data spoke at a public meeting in Pasadena. Rosalie Lopez is a research scientist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which controlled the orbiter for not only the 8 years at Jupiter, but also the 6-year journey to the gas giant. On this evening's The Space Show, we wind the clock back for a decade and hear part of Dr. Lopez's lecture.
To me, the most interesting moon of all is Io, the volcanic moon. And Io is also called the pizza moon because when the Voyager scientists first saw it, they said it looked like a pizza, and it became known as the pizza moon ever since. Well, the surface, in fact, has a lot of sulfur dioxide, and the NIMS instrument, in fact, was very good at mapping the sulfur dioxide. And lots of little black areas. These are the olives in the pizza, if you like. And one of the things we found with Galileo, by looking at the NIMS infrared data that could sense heat and the images, is that the dark areas are generally hot. That is, all actually of the hot areas are dark. And there is also some rather vivid reds, and that's a form of sulfur, that's S4, and a lot of yellows, it's another form of sulfur. So Io is, given the, you know, radiation and, you know, the volcanic activity and all the sulfur, it's, you know, some people say it's sort of the classic idea of hell, but, you know, we volcanologists really like it. Now, this is one of the first NIMS observations of Io. Now, I told you that we couldn't record images from the first flyby of Io because we had this tape recorder anomaly. So I thought at that time that I would only see Io from great distances of, that is of 200,000 kilometers or more. But even from great distances, we started detecting lots of active volcanoes in the infrared. This is at 5 microns. And in fact, NIMS turned out to be an amazing instrument to detect volcanoes, active volcanoes. And by the end of the mission, with NIMS data, we had detected 71 active volcanoes that were not known before. And to give you an idea, the Voyager spacecraft in its flyby had found about 24 places that were what we call hotspots, places of hot volcanism. And Voyager's instruments also, hot is a relative term. As I said before, they had not detected very high temperatures. So there was this debate whether the volcanoes were sulfur or silicates. Sulfur melts at a much lower temperature than silicates. And because of all the colors on the surface and the sulfur dioxide detected over one of the plumes by Voyager, there were a lot of people thinking that these volcanoes were sulfur. And we actually started finding that they had temperatures that were too high for sulfur. And here actually marked some, these two are just names that I made up, North Cultures 1 and 2, they're also new. And this one, I actually left it wrong. I thought it was a volcano called Raiden Patera, and then on a further analysis, I noticed that the position didn't quite correspond, and that turned out to be a new volcano that was later named Pilan and turned out to be quite important. Now, why does Io have active volcanoes? It's because of tidal forces. Now, here it's again a Voyager image, but with Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto showing the orbits. Well, Io is the innermost moon, and it's pulled by Jupiter's gravity. And in fact, if the other moons didn't exist, Io would have a big tidal bulge rises. Quite a considerable distance over the surface, but it would always point towards Jupiter, and you wouldn't have any volcanoes at all. But what happens is that because of these other satellites further out, but are much closer to Io than Jupiter, although they are much smaller, they try to pull that tidal bulge towards them and distort the tidal bulge, and that's what causes friction that leads to heat and Io's interior remaining molten. And it's truly amazing that, in fact, Io's volcanism was predicted shortly before a Voyager got there by Professor Stan Peale and a couple of his colleagues who, in fact, studied his orbits and predicted that volcanism might happen on Io. And they published their work about 3 weeks before Voyager got there, so it was really well-timed. Io has amazing volcanic plumes. This image was taken in 1997 and showed a plume over the volcano called Pilan, the one that NIMS found in that image, and that at first I thought it was another volcano. This is a volcano called Prometheus. You can see here a shadow of a plume. And this plume, if I remember correctly, was close to 100 miles high. And we got some other images and also NIMS thermal data from this volcano, from this volcanic eruption, and realized that we had been really lucky. Now, this is Pilan, this little caldera here that you can hardly see. This was in April 1997. This big red ring is from another of Io's major volcanoes, Pele. And this is about 800 miles across. And in September, you could see the black eye. This has enough area to cover the whole state of Arizona. Also, my colleagues in the imaging team were mostly at the University of Arizona, so they liked that comparison. But what was really lucky about us catching this eruption is that we also observed this spot in darkness with both the camera and NIMS, and actually got thermal data that was very, very good and could give us a temperature. And while we had already found that Io's volcanoes, at least some of them, were far too hot to be sulfur, and they were more like silicates on Earth. With this volcano, we found that these lavas were hotter than anything that we see on Earth. So Io became much more interesting. Now, you know, what happens is, I think in Kelvin, so I actually put Fahrenheit next to it. But Pilan Patera has temperatures that approach 3,000 Fahrenheit. And basaltic lavas on Earth have much lower eruption temperatures. That's the kind of lava you might find in Hawaii. But ultramafic lavas on Earth, which are prehistoric lavas rich in magnesium, had eruption temperatures in this range. So we think that although we have no direct compositional measurements, we think that that's what Io is erupting, and not just in one volcano, but perhaps all of them. The problem is it's actually quite difficult to detect the eruption temperatures of lavas, which is what gives you a handle on the composition, because you have to be looking at exactly the right time. Lava cools very quickly. So it makes it very hard to measure eruption temperature, particularly if the areas you are exposing are very small and you're looking from a great distance. And so with the Pilan eruption, was a very vigorous eruption, was putting out a lot of new lava, and we happened to get it really at the right time. Now, to prove to you that lava, in fact, cools very quickly, That's a, you know, a picture in Hawaii. And, you know, no, I'm not pregnant, but I had to wear this silly vest. And that's because the that was like five times too big for me. But the National Park Service wanted us to be, you know, easy to rescue. So, but in fact, this is not particularly dangerous. You can do this on your vacation. This lava is still very fresh. You know, this one is this little bit here is flowing. And in fact, it's possible to walk over flowing lava. You just have to give it a little time to form a crust that, you know, is strong enough for you to stand on. Yeah, actually, it's okay. Maybe it takes a while. You know, a friend of mine, a volcanologist, years ago, we worked on Mount Etna in Sicily, and he took a group of students up to see an active flow, and he told me later that he had taken him, you know, several years working on volcanoes to have the courage to walk over flowing lava, but he went and showed the students that he could do it, you know, and then he turned around and all the students had gone onto the flow and we're all taking pictures of each other. So it depends on your level of comfort. And, you know, and some people have a very high level of comfort. I would not recommend doing this on your vacation to Hawaii. But this is a fellow called Matthias Wendt. He's a German filmmaker and has amazing photographs. He does some pretty amazing stuff. And I gather the National Parks people, you know, are not too happy with him because you see, he doesn't even wear one of those reflective vests. Going back to Io, now I told you we did these distant observations, and in fact we found this high temperature volcanism from these very distant observations that were, you know, a couple hundred thousand kilometers or more. But then we started doing Io flybys because, you know, it was the end of the GEM mission, so we could risk a couple. And in fact, as we started planning this first two in 1999, we also thought, well, why not plan one in February of 2000? And our project manager at the time, I remember, showed us a graph of the radiation dosage that Galileo would withstand on these flybys and said, look, guys, the October one we'll probably get. The November, wow, you know, we're really pushing it. February, I think we're dreaming. But he also said, why not try it? Because, you know, we have had a lot of luck so far, and that's what we're going to need. You know, it's luck. And in fact, Galileo turned out to survive all these other flybys as well. And it turned out to be a much more resilient spacecraft than, you know, even the engineers had thought. So I'm going to show you some, first of all, a difference in resolution. Now, this was is actually the same image that I showed earlier from NIMS 5 microns, where you can see the heat of the volcanoes. And these are some taken during the first flybys. And as you can see, the closer we look, the more volcanoes we see. And now I am actually the person who keeps the count of the Io volcanoes. And we know there are at least 152, 104 were detected by Galileo. And there are likely many more. You know, unfortunately, with the low data rate from Galileo, we couldn't actually take, you know, similar data over the whole moon. And we never got close-up measurements of the side facing Jupiter. So we still don't have a very good idea what's going on there. Now, we detected another one of these very violent eruptions in a place called Chvostok Katena during the 1999 flyby. And here is the original camera image. It actually was so hot that it saturated the pixels bled. And in the NIMS data, it also saturated our pixels. So we could not actually get a temperature for these lavas apart from a minimum temperature. But we think that, you know, they were as hot as Pilan. And here my colleagues on the imaging team interpreted from the shape of the bleeding pixels what was going on here, which they thought was a row of fire fountains and a lava flow. And when we went back in 2000, this is an artist's concept. It's a drawing over a real image, but that's the real image. This one is a real image using their infrared filter. Very hot lavas here again saturated the instruments. So we couldn't actually get very good temperatures. But this volcano, turned out, this eruption was so spectacular. It was actually detected from Earth from one of the telescopes in Hawaii with an infrared camera. And this volcano also turned out to be rather interesting. This is what we think. This is a picture of a fire fountain in Hawaii with a lava flow. And this is probably what was going on at Chvastar. And if you're lucky, you can see one of those in Hawaii. But when Cassini, actually on its way to Saturn, flew by Jupiter in December of 2000, and he detected a plume at this volcano, Chvastar, that we knew this volcano was erupting at the end of 1999 and then in February of 2000. And not only that, but if you look at the difference here, these are Galileo images. This was before the plume. This was after the plume. So he had a new red ring very similar to Pele. Around 700-800 miles across. And that presented a problem for us because the next IO flyby planned for August of 2001, the spacecraft was going to fly by here. And we started thinking, now is Galileo going to fly through this plume that may still be active? And is that risky? What are we going to do? So we started a lot of emails and a lot of experts giving opinions. And we even prepared an animation, which we can show now. It's actually a quick one, but we thought, well, in the end, we decided to risk it, that the particle density of the plume was also not high enough to damage the spacecraft. And this plume actually might not be active because this is a type of plume on Io that comes on and off. That's a simulation of the spacecraft flying through a plume done here at JPL. And surviving, of course. Okay, so... After the flyby, my colleagues from the imaging team said, that on an image taken just as Galileo receded from Io, they had in fact detected a huge plume, about 500 kilometers high, which is the highest plume ever detected on Io. But when they tried to fit it to the source, they couldn't quite fit it to Chvastar, to this volcano. They thought, well, it's not quite coming from there. It has to be coming from somewhere else. And they asked me, okay, what else is active around there? And, we tried several things, and none of them quite fit. Until I got an image taken by NIMS, a thermal map of that region taken on that flyby, and found this huge one. This huge volcano, the middle pixels here, this is a 4.7 micron map, and are saturated. It was, again, so hot that it saturated the pixels of the instrument. And this is a volcano we didn't even know existed. So I called Alfred McEwen on the imaging team, and I said, I know where your plume's coming from. But what happened to Galileo was actually rather exciting, because this is Chvastar, where the other plume was coming from, and in fact, it might still have been active at the time. And this is the new volcano that hasn't been named yet. It's probably going to get named Thor. And Galileo flew right between these two and actually survived. So we had spent so much time worrying about Galileo meeting one plume when, in fact, it met another plume and possibly even two. So Io was pretty exciting. We never knew what was, it was going to throw at us next. And this is the enhanced image showing the new plume. And in fact, when they finally got an image, this is the Chvastar plume. This was the new plume, which was actually white, having more sulfur dioxide, and Galileo flew right between the two. Now, why are plumes on Io so high? Old Faithful and Io would be about 24 kilometers high. And it's not only because, you know, ballistically you can throw things higher up on Io, but it's mainly because Io has no atmosphere, so you are erupting these things in a vacuum. And that means that these plumes can reach enormous speeds and really go up. Then this is another of my favorite images of Io. This is the Tupan volcano. And, you know, quite difficult to understand what's going on there. But, in fact, using both NIMS and imaging data, we found out that this is a caldera or a volcanic crater with a lava lake. And the dark is hot material. The lighter parts, this is an island, a kind of island that's cold. And these greens are probably molten sulfur that came down the walls. And this is a really very, very strange volcano. And here there are probably ponds of fresh lava bubbling up through a cooled crust. And as the crust cools, if it gets really cold, sulfur dioxide can condense on it and making it lighter in color. And this is one of the many volcanoes on Io that we found contain lava lakes. And that was another finding from Galileo because, you know, we hadn't really realized that many of Io's volcanoes could be lava lakes that just stay bubbling there for a long time, like this lava lake here in Hawaii. This is on the Kilauea volcano. And lava lakes can, in fact, go on for many, many years. And one characteristic, if you do a thermal map of a lava lake, is that often you get hot material along the edges. And that is because that cold crust is breaking up as it sloshes against the sides of the caldera. And that's something that we found on a number of these volcanoes. So I'm making thermal maps. These are, again, two NIMS maps at 2.3 microns and 4 microns showing hot edges, you know, particularly, you know, over here. This is another volcano called Loki. And again, it has this cold island, and we don't yet understand why Io's volcanoes, at least a number of them, seem to have these lava lakes and then cold islands in the center. At least in the case of Loki and Tupan, the islands have survived since Voyager days, so they're probably not really floating but anchored in some way. So Io remains to me the you know, most beautiful and the most interesting of the moons. There is a lot more that we can find out. Observations from Earth carry on. Now our telescopes and instruments are much improved, so you know, we can do some monitoring from Earth, also hoping that another spacecraft will get there one day. So in summary, Galileo did all this science with only about 30 gigabytes of data. So that's actually pretty small by today's standards. And had a maximum data rate of 160 bits per second. You know, that makes my 10-year-old son go, wow. But then, you know, he doesn't think there was life before the internet. We put our data on the tape recorder, but it had only a capacity of 900 megabits. So that's why we had to, argue so much and fight for everything that went on the tape recorder and then every bit that came to Earth, and had processors with less capability than the first PCs. But, you know, it was quite a survivor. It survived more than four times the radiation dose it was designed to, and this is the drawing of the real Galileo, as we think it looks like, with the stuck high-gain antenna. And it had a fantastic flight team that just pulled off all these miracles. And on Sunday, what's going to happen? That's the end. 12:57 Pacific Standard Time, so spare a thought for Galileo then. Galileo encountered the outer layers of Jupiter's atmosphere. This is a drawing made by Michael Caro, who is a space artist. And it will come in at, a rather tremendous speed. In fact, if you could fly at this speed, you go from Los Angeles to New York in less than 2 minutes. So that gives you an idea how fast it's traveling. It will just vaporize and become part of Jupiter, which is a suitable end for this mission. And, I'm sure there'll be a lot in the news on Sunday about Galileo, and I hope you think about the spacecraft then. So thank you very much, and if you have questions, I'll try to answer them.
That was Dr. Rosalie Lopez, a research scientist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. She was speaking in Pasadena to a public audience as the Galileo orbiter began its terminal plunge into the atmosphere of Jupiter. And we'll hear more of this lecture next week when Rosalie invites questions from the audience. Well, the Space Show thanks Alan Walker for acquiring this lecture recording.
Online all the time at southernfm.com.au.